Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder. My name is Paul Gerard. Please welcome my co-host, Mr. Crazy Legs Conti.
Honored to be here.
And the Rev Spiro.
Oh yeah.
Fellas, tonight we're going to be talking about city foraging, urban foraging. I'm sure you guys have been out picking off of curbs, you know, behind dumpsters.
My mom used to do this. I'm not even kidding.
Your mother was an urban forager?
Well, my mom did exactly what she did in Greece, which is very simple. All right.
Yeah, but an island in Greece is a little different from Brooklyn. No, I understand Manhattan's an island.
No,
so
hold
I guess.
In Brooklyn, you can get dandelion greens.
Yes, you can. I see them all the time.
How fucking embarrassing that is? Your mother's the crazy lady picking the weeds in the fucking park. You know how fucking embarrassing that is? And she used to also pick, there was blackberries in that park we used to go get high
There still are.
Yeah. She used to pick that kind of stuff. And I'd be sitting there going, Mom, not, no. No, I'll go buy you some. No, you know, these are perfectly good. I don't know, it's a waste of food. I don't understand. You know, I'm used to the idea of there being food around you. I'm still not comfortable with it.
Well, it has developed into a much different thing. But I hear people, and we've joked about this before, that you hear people saying, I'm going foraging. And then you're like, where are you going foraging? And they say, Union Square on Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Right,
like,
exactly.
That's shopping.
No, these stands just appear, these tomato stands. And
well, we used to have this friend Sharif back in Bear Ridge, right? You know how he would forage? Basically, we'd all go to the diner, right? And we'd all order. Sharif, you don't want it? No, I don't want nothing. You know, at the end, while we're like, sitting back, and it's like, hey, you going to eat that? No, you want it? Yeah, I'll get that. Hey,
diner foraging.
You done with that over there? Yeah. By the end of the freaking meal, he had more than the rest of us.
But that's,
you know?
that's a little closer to freeganism. You know? We've all had some unfortunate experiences with freeganism.
The freegans, they're very,
we used to call it starving.
They're very, a very vocal group. I thought they'd be more like hobbits, you know, that it would be like you'd be happy to come across them, but I've had some rough experiences where I was like, I'm really not going for that bag of old bagels. I'm crossing the street, sir.
Really?
Yeah,
they're a tough group, like Hell's Grannies.
It's sad to admit, but yes, I'm intimidated by freegans, especially the ones outside Whole Foods. They seem to be weaned on like something else.
But so. I'm gonna be looking at their feet now, looking for hair every time I see them. It's gonna be like
they're misfitting Birkenstocks. Yeah. Right. They're a size too small because they got them for free.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, freeganism is a thing. I mean, we used to call it dumpster diving. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and now there's a whole movement about it. I understand you shouldn't be wasting food. I just don't. All right. Remember that time I come see you in New Orleans? Like it was like Halloween, I don't know, 90 something, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because I was pretty broke and you weren't doing great. But the funny thing was, like, Paul was like, you know, you can eat better in a dumpster in New Orleans than you can in New York. Mm-hmm. And he was right.
Oh, absolutely. You know? We always ate well down there.
Yeah, you know.
I don't remember doing a lot of dumpster diving, but we had quite a few potlucks.
I think I got really drunk and I fell in a dumpster, and it was yummy.
You fell out of a pickup truck.
I did fall out of a pickup truck into the dumpster.
You were wearing an S&M mask, and you fell out of the back of a pickup truck.
You were wearing a police outfit, and you had your girlfriend on a leash as a schoolboy.
Yeah, I was dressed like a priest, and she was dressed like a schoolboy. Real nice, girl.
And it all ended in a dumpster where you found leftover red beans and rice. So really, it's
everybody who's interested in urban foraging just fled. They just changed the channel.
Well, my problem was this, Paris. I'm completely germophobic. Like, you know, when we did that show about bugs, I wasn't worried about the bug. I'm worried about like the bugs in the bug, like parasites. You know, diseases. Fungi, just anything that I'm not quite sure about. It's the ignorance that I'm really, really terrified of, from the standpoint of, you know, I don't know what could possibly happen out in the wilds of Queens. You know,
wouldn't you think though the wilds of Queens would be have less germs than, say, the subway you take to Queens?
Well, yeah, but I don't know what dog piss does to a dandelion green. You know, like, I have no clue what, you know, squirrel saliva does to a mushroom. Mm-hmm. You know, so
well,
this
there's squirrels in forests, you know, national forests, too. I mean,
yeah, but they're not eating Cheetos and other squirrels. You know, they're eating, you know, what squirrels are supposed to eat. They're, you know what they're doing? They're foraging.
Well,
you know?
It is all the rage these days, and everybody is tapping into the bountiful things, eating and growing in every major metropolitan area in the nation. We were supposed to have Wild Man Steve Brill on today, but I think he's out in a no phone zone in Central Park. Either that, or he got arrested again. Did you read about that? The guy got arrested. He got arrested for foraging
so
in Central Park.
Right. It is illegal to eat Central Park.
Yeah, they say
only certain hours, probably.
Well, this was in 1985 that he got arrested for picking dandelion greens in Central Park. I mean, that anybody would eat anything out of Central Park in 1985, but you would think that people, the law enforcement would have had other things to crack down on.
It was the broken window theory, because they knew it would eventually lead to, you know, the Robert Chamber murders in Central Park. They're like, get that guy with the dandelions
exactly.
before it all goes to hell.
Because guppy rape is happening, and yes. it's all done. You know,
people hopped up on dandelion salad.
The wild thing.
Unthinkable
things. Yeah, wild thing. That was another one, yeah.
Crazy hippies running through picking dandelion greens.
Did you see Into the Wild or read the book?
No.
I mean, that would be the ultimate forager's fear, I suppose, because it was a guy who went just off the face of the earth, off the grid.
Had that taken place in Central Park, you think he would have broken down and gotten a hot dog?
I think so. Or at least, like, leftover hot dogs. He may not have had to buy it. It might have been one of those, like, hey, there's a couple floating in the water here that aren't going to go bad. But this was a kid who went out in the wild and actually ended up, you know, finding a moose, but he couldn't eat it because the meat had gone bad. Right, he had rice. His supplies went down. And in the end, he ate some berries that killed him.
Well,
so there's
that really sucks.
I mean, cautionary tale.
That's look. We started. The thing is, in our evolutionary process, we started basically foraging. We were hunters and gatherers, right? We didn't start eating by you know, growing plants and or raising livestock. All right. So at one point or another, this came natural to human beings. We actually went out there, you know, like, you know, like Yogi Bear, hey, nuts and berries.
He still does. We're so urbanized, you know, for everybody else, this is a fairly normal occurrence. You know, like you and I grew up on pizza.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Well, look at how it's flipped, though. I mean, here we are in the backyard of Roberta's, which has a garden.
And they have a garden tour.
And they do pizza toppings from their own garden, and that's a premium food scenario in New York. I mean, we were talking about foraging. I heard about foraging from these high-end restaurants, these celebrity chefs who are trying to take the notion of going to the Union Square Market one step further. Like, this is a salad I made from things I collected, or, you know.
Right, well, it's really popular with the guys from, like, Denmark and everything, and they're pulling out some crazy stuff, you know, different reeds and bits of bark, and some crazy things. Well, we do have a guest today that is going to be joining us. He is one of the premier experts on edible plants in the North America and beyond. I'm sure we're very lucky to have him today. His name is Lee Allen Peterson. And Lee, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much for joining us such last minute.
Oh, my pleasure.
So we've been rambling on a little bit, and maybe you can reel us in and talk to us about it.
I've been listening in. You pretty much have said it. At one time, we all knew how to do this. And somewhere along the line, we got civilized and lost the talent to go out there and pick our own food and hunt our own food and so forth and so on. It is something that, I think recently National Geographic does a survey of a demographic survey of the world periodically. And just about 3 or 4 years ago, we crossed a threshold where more people live in cities of over 1 million than live in the countryside. It gives you an indication of you know why we've gone the way we've gone, that we're much more comfortable finding, you know, using things that are cellophane wrapped than things that we pick with our own hands.
Well, I mean, yeah, there was a whole series done about why America became the world power, and the three things that they quote are guns, steel, and food. You know, in other words, the manufacture of guns, the manufacture of steel, and the manufacture of food are the three main things that we had over every other, large nation at the time. But, you know, going back to the idea of how did we do it at first, who was that? I'm wondering if there was like a caveman point man. You know, and the thing is, like, you know, like you had the chief.
That first person.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the chief. Zog, you go eat weird thing. Oh, damn. We honor Zog's sacrifice. Memo to tribe. Do not eat the weird thing.
Yeah, Oog, you next. Actually, my wife was puzzling over the same thing yesterday. Who was the first rabbit who tried whatever and found it to be good? It's one of the neat things about wild foods and foraging is that it's kind of a long-term communal process. It's just that we've been experimenting over the centuries and the millennia with wild foods, and gradually we build up this body of knowledge about things. So, you know, there's simple things that we have all the time that we don't even think twice about eating, things like apples. Nobody thinks twice about chomping down into an apple, but some mushroom out in the woods, we all feel a little bit hesitant about it, or maybe a lot hesitant.
As we
about
should,
it.
Though, wouldn't you say? As we should, because some
as you should.
Right. Well, I mean, are there any more than the do's? I'm a germophobic. I'm a complete hypochondriac. I'm afraid of everything, food wise or whatever. Are there certain things, if I was stuck in the forest, don't do this, you know, like absolutely do not ever try this?
Well, basically, the single most important cautionary is that don't eat something that you don't know what you're eating. it's kind of a no-brainer.
I got you.
Other than that, my feeling is that things out in the wild are usually more clean and germ-free than things that you're going to get in the markets. It's been handled. It's like, you know, opening up a newspaper and flipping to the center section. Nobody's handled that before. Same thing with wild edibles. Basically, human hands haven't touched these things. You're the first. And so oftentimes, they're a whole lot more pristine than the things that you get in the market.
So Lee, you and your father became famous in the field of edible wild plants and birds, etc., for your Peterson Field Guides. Have you considered, or maybe we can inspire you to do an urban street field guide?
It might have already been done. I don't know if Steve Rill did one yet or not. Certainly, he's written about foraging in Central Park enough. Actually, there's several people that are focusing in on the urban landscape.
How do you feel about that? Because you've traveled all over this country, and I'm sure you've eaten some amazing things. How do you feel about the whole urban foraging?
Well, I have to say, I have mixed feelings about it. In some respects, it's a really admirable thing. I like adventuresome people. I like people who are willing to try new things or try old things. But basically, one of the things that this is not so much true these days as it was true 40 years ago, but you didn't want to collect things that were next to a highway just because of the lead in the gasoline. Well, we don't have the lead in the gasoline anymore, but we have other things. Hmm. So you use kind of common sense. You look for areas that are a little less removed from highly trafficked areas as you can. You want to make sure that you wash everything thoroughly before you use it. It's just usual common sense usually stands you in good stead.
Are there colors in nature that signify either good or bad, or is that just too general? Like when you're looking at a plant, is there an indicator that this is going to be a good thing to eat or a bad thing to eat?
Well, certainly if something's really bitter, you might want to look at it a little bit more closely and a little bit more askance. But that doesn't hold true all the time either.
That's true, because I just saw fiddlehead ferns for like $20 a pound at the market, so...
I think I may change my business here. When I lived in the Northwest, we all used to just wander out in the woods and collect chanterelle mushrooms. I think recently I saw the price of chanterelles were something like $40 a pound.
Yeah, it's insane.
Well, okay, so outrageous.
I mean, but truffles are still gotten in the wild, aren't they? I mean, and those are like, how expensive are truffles these days?
Well, they're,
I've never actually seen a truffle myself in the wild.
Through Oregon and through the Northwest?
Pardon?
Not even through the Northwest and Oregon. I know they're cultivating them now in Georgia a lot.
Truffles require, specialized either hounds or pigs to find, because the fruiting body is always underground. And it's one of the incredible things about truffles is that it's never on the surface. You can never see it. And finding them is tricky.
I keep thinking I'm finding them in Central Park, and the taste test that I do turns out to be pretty horrific.
Yeah.
And there's the poop for the show.
His truffle hunting involves hounds, but not in the traditional sense.
That's not a truffle.
Yeah. Well, it does bring up another point about wild foods, which is that one of the other things that you should do with wild foods is if you're trying them for the first time, first thing to do is find somebody to show you what the plant looks like. It's always the best way. If you can't find somebody, then get yourself a reputable field guide that will show you.
Yeah, I mean, that's like what
not
the
just that plant, but compare it to other plants.
Yeah, well, like what the pilgrims did to the Indians, and then we kill them.
Yeah.
There you go. I thought you were going to say have somebody else try.
On all this stuff, if you go foraging, you want to try stuff in small amounts initially. You just want to sample it and see if you're still here 24 hours later.
It's just dive
in.
It's the acid rule.
And there are two reasons for that. I mean, one is either you may have misidentified the plant, and you're dealing with something that's a bit more problematic, or you may have an allergy to something that you never realized. So it's always best to try things sparingly. It goes with most foods, as a matter of fact.
Well, and back to the whole idea of, like, you have to wash your food, obviously, but, I mean, are there areas, you said highways, that's a good one, but are there other areas you have to watch out for like, rodenticides, pesticides, things that are so, that we wouldn't even think, because we look at it like, oh, this is just a forest, but... I mean, if it's too close to a farm, there's too many pesticides in it, which is the irony, but,
Yeah, I'm kind of spoiled because I grew up in the countryside, and I've lived most of my life in the countryside. And so I really have not done a whole lot of urban foraging. And so I don't know how one goes. I know there are obvious things that you look for in the countryside. I mean, you don't want to gather as much stuff in an area that has a lot of asphalt fill and so forth and so on. But in an urban landscape, almost everything has asphalt fill. So it's a little bit more difficult.
All right. Well, we're going to go to break. We will be back soon. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you in a minute.
You are listening to Waste Water by Sleepies.
Inside, no problem leaving, babe. give a fuck about it. We're wastewater. Wastewater. We don't give a fuck about it. We're wastewater.
Hey folks, I'm Mike Colomeco, host of Mike Colomeco's Food Talk here on Heritage Radio Network. Do you love us? Do you really? Do you really count on us for real food news and content? Well, we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means we depend on underwriting, grants, and the support of members like you to keep broadcasting. So help keep our voice alive. Visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button today. We promise to never stop in our mission to create a world that's more sustainable, equitable, and delicious by expanding the way eaters think about food. Thanks for listening, and thanks for showing your support.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Let's do like three or four promos.
That one promo made me feel bad. I mean, we're talking about opening up a freaking restaurant in New York called The Dumpster, and I don't know if that's going to fly now because I'm not sure if it's going to make any money.
Yeah, it's probably not going to.
Probably. All right, let's skip that idea.
All right.
I think we have Steve Brill has joined us, the master urban forager, and he's got his daughter Violet with him. Steve, are you there?
Yes, we're there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining. We have Lee Allen Peterson is on the line as well. We've been chatting with him for a little bit. And Steve, the first thing I want to ask you is a very important question. Do we have to wear pith helmets?
It makes it a lot more fun.
And Spiro, remember, his daughter is on the line.
Oh,
so
yes,
bite
yes.
your tongue and enough of the language with okay, you. I've right. had it.
I have a question for Violet. Violet, what is your favorite thing to forage?
I really like to forage wood sorrel and black birch.
And what do you do with the wood sorrel and the black birch?
Well, black birch you can make tea with, and you could chew on the twig and it tastes like wintergreen.
Oh.
And you can use it as a seasoning. And wood sorrel you could put in salads. And I really like to eat it plain because it's really lemony, and I also like to eat all the different parts of it.
That sounds pretty good. I might have to pick up a couple of those on my commute back to Manhattan.
That was the cutest thing I've ever heard.
Suddenly your mind has changed to that urban forage.
Like, I'm going to go forage because this wonderful little girl just told me about the wonders of things I could just find. I have a question for either of you. I mean, before we were asking, you know, what not to do. Don't do this, do that. What about, you know, what do we have that's local to say, I don't know, okay, I mean, can we talk about Brooklyn? Okay, you know, what's local to Brooklyn? Where are some things that are the creme de la creme of what you could find locally growing in parks and shrubs in Brooklyn?
Well, both of those plants are growing there, and they are among the best and most nutritious. Blackberries are coming in season, but unfortunately, I don't expect a good crop. Violet, why do you think we won't get a lot of blackberries?
Because there's too much competition with the iPhone.
Hey,
yeah, well, we will get elderberries. Wow. Those are coming in soon. Those are good too. And chicken mushrooms grow in Brooklyn. Those
chicken
are
mushrooms,
fantastic.
What do they look like, or how can we tell? You know what a chicken mushroom is.
Okay, first of all, they're polypores. Polypores all grow on wood, living, dead, buried, logs, stumps, live trees. Two, they are shaped like shelves, not like umbrellas. And three, they have pores or holes underneath, not gills. The chicken mushroom is a polypore that's bright orange on top, and the underside can be either yellow or white. And it tastes like chicken meat, but much better.
Ah. What? And how do you usually prepare it after you've harvested some or Foraged some, rather.
Any kind of chicken recipe. Mm-hmm. Violet, are there any chicken mushroom recipes you happen to like? If we found another chicken mushroom, how would you want to cook it? It's soup, sautéed, with pasta.
I would like it with pasta the best.
Pasta.
Is there a specific shape that is great, a good pasta shape?
I like it with macaroni. I'm a vegan, so I put on vegan cheese or make a sauce, melt it, and bake it. That works great. It's a very versatile mushroom. You can do almost anything with it, and you can find it in large quantities. The most I've ever found was 60 pounds at once, but people have found larger ones.
Wow. Huh,
wow.
I would imagine, though, even though you know you've given such a great description of how you can identify these things, and anybody actually listening to this right now probably shouldn't take that just by listening to it and eat something off a stump in Prospect Park. But
you can find me on Facebook, friend me, and post a bunch of queer pictures on my timeline. That's an easy one to recognize.
Okay. Yeah, because
Violet can easily identify that one, tell you what it is.
Very nice. Because Lee was talking to me about cosmopolitan weeds, and the last I'd heard about that, I think, was when David Lee Roth got pinched in Washington Square Park. So maybe you could shed a little light on that.
On which one?
Cosmopolitan weeds. Lee was saying that cosmopolitan weeds are weeds that grow in cosmopolitan areas like lamb quarters, purslane, chicory.
Yeah, well, speaking of getting pinched, I got arrested for eating a dandelion.
That's amazing. We were talking about that earlier.
This was in the 80s that this occurred?
Yeah, in the 80s. We had undercover park rangers who infiltrated my tour. It was a man and a woman. They said they were married. They never held hands or kissed, so I figured they'd been married a long time. They paid me with marked bills.
Wow! Really? And this
at the end of the tour, I ate a dandelion. The mail ranger hid behind a tree, took out a hidden walkie-talkie. There he is on 81st Street. Go get him! Every park ranger in Central Park popped out from behind the bushes.
It's like Will
they
Ferrell
surrounded me in case I was going to climb up a tree. Put me in handcuffs lest I bop them on the head with a dandelion. Yeah, yeah. They searched me. I don't know if they were looking for weeds or weed.
Mm-hmm.
But they hauled me off to the police station in handcuffs where they took fingerprints and mugshots. They searched my backpack. Fortunately, I'd eaten all the evidence.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Then they charged me with criminal mischief. I could have been in jail for a year. And made a bad mistake, they turned me loose. I spent the next day on the phone with the press.
Mm-hmm.
I got on everything from CBS Evening News to Letterman, MTV, page one of the Chicago Sun-Times. When they took me to court, I served Wild Man's five-borough salad on the steps of the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse. The press ate that one up, too.
Mm-hmm.
The city lost their appetite for pursuing this any further. They negotiated with me, dropped the charges, and hired me to lead the same foraging tours I was leading when I was arrested.
Wow,
I worked with them for the next 4 years and left when a new administration took over and reneged on the agreement with the first one. I later found out from previous Parks Commissioner Benepi that they had arrested me because they were afraid of frivolous lawsuits. That if they permitted foraging, someone would pretend to have been poisoned foraging and sue the city.
But
years later, I found out if they arrest you for reason different from what they state in the charges, it's criminal wrongdoing called false arrest.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm hoping they do it again.
So you are the original outlaw eater.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As much as I'm glad you didn't go to jail for a year, I would have liked to have been in the cell when people were like, I'm in for Grand Theft Auto. What are you in for? You're like, I ate dandelions.
Well, I mean, since we're on the subject, strictly for the nutritional value, if you were looking to forage, I don't know, cannabis or peyote, I mean, are these things that you could possibly find growing wild in New York or Brooklyn specifically?
Are there what?
We'll look,
Spiro's looking
facetious.
For mind
well,
alterants.
We're getting wineberries now. Those are so good that when you eat them, you can die of happiness. But if you don't, when they go out of season... you die of grief.
Oh, wow.
They are incredibly delicious. And Asian, it's an Asian species of raspberry that's quite invasive and really all over the place.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting, though, what you said about the city. I could see them being concerned about that, about somebody getting sick on one of these things.
No, they were concerned about someone pretending to have gotten sick and suing the city.
Okay,
I've been doing this for 32 years. I just had close to 80 people in Central Park. No one has ever gotten sick. The stuff makes you healthy. It's what you buy in the fast food places that make you sick.
Yeah, well, that's agreeable. How do you feel about the canoe rides in the Gowanus Canal? Are you okay with that?
As long as I'm not in a canoe there, that's definitely. I don't think there's anywhere I'd rather not canoe.
Because I think it's one of the things that makes me, like, I kind of connect that, you know, cause just growing up here that I just, when I see people going, ooh, chives, you know, coming out of a curb somewhere that I think, oh, my God, please don't eat that. You're going to die.
Yeah.
And it's the same effect that I have when I see people canoeing in the Gowanus Canal, and I'm just like, oh, Jesus, that's where the bodies are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but lately, this foraging, like you just said, you had 80 people the other day.
Today.
I've seen buckets on trees where people are tapping the trees for the maple. Mm. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about tapping?
Yeah, that's fine. Certainly doesn't hurt the tree. People have been doing that for a long time.
And leaving it in a park in Harlem.
Yeah. That sounds totally reasonable. Why not?
Wow. So what are some of the best things to look for right now? Lee was mentioning that lamb's quarters are abundant presently. Is that the same in Brooklyn? Because he's in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's tons of that. It's related to spinach and loaded with vitamins and very tasty. I'm a vegan. I've come up with a creamed vegan lamb's quarters recipe that works quite well. Works with amaranth too, which is in Brooklyn and other places.
I was talking about that with Lee earlier. We were on the phone together, and he was mentioning, you know, amaranth is a grain, but I've never had the leaves.
Okay, it's not technically a grain. Grains are the seeds of grasses, and lamb's quarter is not in the grass family. It's related to quinoa. The seeds are a lot of work to remove. Amaranth is quite a bit better. And we're also getting the seeds of garlic mustard. Garlic mustard is a plant that's in the mustard family. The leaves smell and taste like garlic. That's protected from insects. Very good defense unless Italian insects find it.
Hey-o!
Garlic mustard.
Going back to how this all developed, I mean, that's the whole idea about effective foraging. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but the idea is to exert the least amount of energy to get the most amount of nutritional value in food out of it. You know, so seeds are not a good foraging thing to go after. Is that what you're trying to say with that?
Yeah. It's a huge amount of work, and you don't really get very much. You're better off with amaranth, which is somewhat related, and that gives you tons of seeds. And as I said, there's a plant called garlic mustard, which has these really nice garlicky seeds. Bob, you want to say anything about the garlic mustard seeds?
Well, I really like to make bean dip with the garlic mustard seeds.
To make bean dip.
All right.
Yeah, they're quite delicious. They come in pods, and the pods are shaped like needles. And there are so many of these needle-shaped pods. Although there's a lot of this in Brooklyn because of all the needles. You could imagine that the plant evolved in the South Bronx.
Well, I was going to say, you're setting me up for some good jokes
there. Going there.
Invasion of the foraging snatchers.
He foraged and snatched that joke right up from under me.
Do you know what Keith Richards and a Christmas tree have in common?
What?
They both dry up and leave needles lying around.
Hey.
Steve, I have a quick question. Are there any foragers out there who are using what they find to make alcohol out of? I'm thinking mostly of like grand wormwood being turned into absinthe, but I'd be curious if you know any.
I do that. I make wines with all kinds of wild foods. I've even made oak leaf wine, which is incredibly delicious. I sort of surprised myself on that one. I don't really care for drinking myself, but I use the wines in cooking, and that works great. I've made wines with a redbud tree. I made wines with daylily shoots. a whole bunch of different plants. And of course, wineberries make an incredible wine. I've made elderberry wine, too.
So it's
pretty easy. You just put the plant in a non-metal container with wine yeast with some chopped up fruits like oranges and lemons, including the rind. You get wine yeast online and let it open ferment for a few days. First, you have to heat the plants up to boiling to kill any competing microorganisms. Then when it's lukewarm, you add the wine yeast and dissolve in some sugar for the yeast to work on. And after a couple of weeks, you strain it and bottle it with a special top that allows carbon dioxide to escape and keeps the oxygen out. You get that in wine supply places, too. It's called an airlock. And after 6 weeks to 6 months, it's done. Strain everything out, bottle it, and enjoy it.
Well, you're changing my view on all this, because usually my whine about this was, oh, I don't want to eat vegetables from the park.
Right.
Well, could I ask you this? I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, should we be in a position, like we take everything for granted, but things can change overnight. Should you be in a position where you do have to live off the land? Do you think you yourself personally, the way things are today, could live entirely on a forage diet?
Yeah, you could, but that's not the main point. People are dying prematurely left and right from the bad food that they're eating. And the evidence that the cafeteria diet with high-fat white flour and sugar is killing people prematurely is undeniable. And you really do live a longer life with whole good foods, and the ones in the parks are the ones that are highest in nutrients. Also, these are completely renewable. These are the same things that are being cut down by the millions by mowers. So we picked the same thing in Central Park today with close to 80 people that we've been collecting for over 32 years, and there is no lack, and it's in the same spots.
How much of your diet here in New York is from forage food?
Probably about 10%. I'm quite busy doing tours up to 5 days a week, emails, phone calls. I write books. I have an app. It's called Wild Edibles, which you can get from the iTunes Store, Android Marketplace. It has a picture of me with a explorer's hat and a plant in my mouth. And I also have a website, wildmansteveBrill.com, that has a lot of information, resources, links, book excerpts, plant stuff, and of course all the TV clips of me getting arrested.
I was asking Lee earlier if he was going to do a Peterson's Field Guide for the street, but that's basically what you've already done, huh?
Yeah, my stuff is basically covers everything. I mean, the app covers the best plants of the northeast, half of which are around the country. And updates are going to be coming up with the entire country, everything I know about these plants, from recipes to harvesting, nutritional information, when to collect these, when not to collect them. I have a general book identifying and harvesting edible and medicinal plants in wild and not-so-wild places. Also covers the whole country, a specialty book on shoots and greens of early spring in the Northeast. My newest is Foraging with Kids, with Violet and me on the cover, and digging up some burdock roots. And that has the easiest to recognize plants that parents, grandparents, and teachers to use with kids, with tons of information, folklore, poetry, science projects, craft projects, that you can do with the plants, all the mythology, my own anecdotes. It's a lot of fun and a great way for
you sell your own antidotes.
And I have my wild vegan cookbook with my best recipes.
So it also says on your site that it says $15 a head for your trips, but poor people, if they are interested, can go along no charge.
Yeah, it suggests the donation is $20 per person. Yeah, and I never turn people away due to lack of funds.
But do you find
I'm happy to have people come for free if they have no money. And I had almost 80 people today, so I cannot complain.
But it would seem to me that this is more of an upper middle class kind of affectation, that they would be more into the whole foraging thing. Do you get a lot of urban inner city kind of people coming along on your trips?
I get some inner city people coming on the tours, definitely, and people from other countries. It's a tremendously diverse crowd of people. I do a lot of stuff with children. I work with schools, museums, nature centers, garden clubs too. So sometimes I'm with the senior citizens.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about celebrity chefs kind of co-opting foraging and putting it on the menu and charging $32 for an entree?
Well, I'm glad they're making it more popular, but the celebrity chefs really don't know that much about foraging. It's all ramps, morel, sometimes lamb's quarters and purslane. I occasionally have chefs or groups of chefs and kitchen personnel coming on my tours. The thing is, it's very hard to feed a restaurant crowd with forage stuff. Mm-hmm. Foraging is more appropriate for a family-sized collection. To go to all these disparate places and get that kind of quantity is a huge, huge amount of time and effort, and the chefs are pretty much stuck in their kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll get a few forage things from suppliers, but the vast majority of the most delicious edible plants, most of them have never heard of.
I still have an image of Emeril on your tour going, purslane, and getting really excited.
Hey!
Bam! Plant!
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Steve, Violet, Lee. Thank you very much for joining us. And we appreciate you coming on. You guys have anything else you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
Or shamelessly plug?
Yeah, another plug. Check out Wildman Steve Brill. I do tours throughout the greater New York area, sometimes even as far south as Philadelphia. Violet assists me on half the tours. It's a lot of fun, and enjoying the common renewable resources also makes you more knowledgeable about the ecosystems and makes it easier to protect the non-renewables. Happy foraging, everyone.
Thanks so
happy
much.
Foraging. And thank you, Violet, too.
And my comment is just get out there and forage. You'll be better for it.
Thank cool. you very much. All right, guys, have a good night. We'll see you next time on Eating Disorder.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.